And now, from the Daniel Scappin Studio, deep in the foothills of the North Georgia Mountains, it's Mike Malloy.
Oh my God, have you had enough? Huh? Another 24-hour cycle in the age of Trump. What a total mindfuck this has become, right? We are, as usual, having some problems with our video feed. Apparently, it's we're going to have to get a different piece of equipment. So. Or Kathy's going to have to figure out a way to fix it. Until that happens, there just won't be video. Now, it should be taken care of relatively quickly, but, you know, like anything else about this program, it's hard to say. I want to start tonight. I have an essay that I'm going to share with you next hour, written by Tom Englehart. That I think should be required reading for everybody in the country. Tom Englehart is on the advisory board, I forget what it's called, of The Nation. And he also has his own website, tomdispatch.com. That's coming up next hour. The news that broke last night, this anonymous op-ed piece in the New York Times. I know we've heard parts and pieces of it all day today, but I want to give you the whole thing in its entirety. It's not that long. And then just talk for a moment about the ripples through this criminal enterprise run by Donald Trump that this op-ed piece has caused. And the Times published sort of an introduction over this piece. This is what they said, or what they wrote, the Times did. The Times is taking the rare step of publishing an anonymous op-ed essay. We've done so at the request of the author, a senior official in the Trump administration, whose identity is known to us and whose job would be jeopardized by its disclosure. We believe publishing this essay anonymously is the only way to deliver an important perspective to our readers. We invite you to submit a question about the essay or our vetting process here. Now, I have some problems with this whole idea. If the person who wrote this essay is sincere in his or her sentences I'm about to share with you, then the request to remain anonymous to me means that this person wants to continue working in the Trump administration, which to me is just fucking insane. I understand the Times publishing it, even though it's anonymous. But the whole thing, and not that I disbelieve any of it. I think every single word in here is true. I don't think there's anything new in here. Just like I don't think there was anything in Bob Woodward's new book, Fear, is something that those of us who still have a brain haven't been aware of. But it just seems not the way to get rid of this filthy cancer. You know, it was John Dean that told Dick Nixon he had a cancer on the presidency. There was a cancer on the presidency. In this instance, Trump is the cancer on not just the presidency, but the whole fucking country. Here's the op-ed piece. President Trump is facing a test to his presidency unlike any faced by a modern American leader. It's not just that the special counsel looms large, or that the country is bitterly divided over Mr. Trump's leadership, or even that his party might well lose the House to an opposition hell-bent on his downfall. The dilemma, which he does not fully grasp, is that many of his senior officials in his own administration are working diligently from within to frustrate parts of his agenda and his worst inclinations. I would know. I am one of them. To be clear, ours is not the popular so-called resistance of the left. We want this administration to succeed and think that many of its policies have already made America safer and more prosperous. But we believe our first duty is to this country, and the president continues to act in a manner that is detrimental to the health of our republic. That is why many Trump appointees have vowed to do what we can to preserve our democratic institutions while thwarting Mr. Trump's more misguided impulses until he is out of office. The root of the problem is the president's amorality. Anyone who works with him knows he is not moored to any discernible first principles that guide his decision-making. Although he was elected as a Republican, the president shows little affinity for ideals long espoused by conservatives, such as free minds, free markets, and free people. At best, he has invoked those ideals in scripted settings. At worst, he has attacked them outright. In addition to his mass marketing of the notion that the press is the, quote, enemy of the people, end quote, President Trump's impulses are generally anti-trade and anti-democratic. Don't get me wrong. There are bright spots that the near ceaseless negative coverage of the administration fails to capture, such as effective deregulation, historic tax reform, a more robust military, and more. But these successes have come despite, not because of, the president's leadership style, which is impetuous, adversarial, petty, and ineffective. From the White House to executive branch departments and agencies, senior officials will privately admit their daily disbelief at the commander-in-chief's comments and actions. Most are working to insulate their operations from his whims. Meetings with him veer off topic and off the rails. He engages in repetitive rants, and his impulsiveness results in half-baked, ill-informed, and occasionally reckless decisions that have to be walked back. A top official complained to me recently, exasperated by an Oval Office meeting at which the president flip-flopped on a major policy decision he'd made only a week earlier, quote, "There is literally no telling whether he might change his mind from one minute to the next," end quote. The erratic behavior would be more concerning if it weren't for unsung heroes in and around the White House. Some of his aides have been cast as villains by the media, but in private, they have gone to great lengths to keep bad decisions contained to the West Wing, though they are clearly not always successful. It may be cold comfort in this chaotic era, but Americans should know that there are adults in the room. We fully recognize what is happening, and we are trying to do what's right even when Donald Trump won't. The result is a two-track presidency. Take foreign policy. In public and in private, President Trump shows a preference for autocrats and dictators, such as President Vladimir Putin of Russia, and North Korea's leader Kim Jong-un. and displays little genuine appreciation for the ties that bind us to allied, like-minded nations. Astute observers have noted, though, that the rest of the administration is operating on another track, one where countries like Russia are called out for meddling and punished accordingly, and where allies around the world are engaged as peers rather than ridiculed as rivals. On Russia, for instance, the president was reluctant to expel so many of Mr. Putin's spies as punishment for the poisoning of a former Russian spy in Britain. He complained for weeks about senior staff members letting him get boxed into further confrontation with Russia, and he expressed frustration that the United States continued to impose sanctions on the country for its malign behavior. But his national security team knew better. Such actions had to be taken to hold Moscow accountable. This isn't the work of the so-called deep state. It's the work of the steady state. Given the instability many witnessed, there were early whispers within the cabinet of invoking the 25th Amendment, which would start a complex process for removing the president. But no one wanted to precipitate a constitutional crisis. So we will do what we can to steer the administration in the right direction until, one way or the other, it's over. The bigger concern is not what Mr. Trump has done to the presidency, but rather what we as a nation have allowed him to do to us. We have sunk low with him and allowed our discourse to be stripped of civility. Senator John McCain put it best in his farewell letter. All Americans should heed his words and break free of the tribalism trap with the high aim of uniting through our shared values and love of this great nation. We may no longer have Senator McCain, but we will always have his example, a lodestar for restoring honor to public life and our national dialogue. Mr. Trump may fear such honorable men, but we should revere them. There is a quiet resistance within the administration of people choosing to put country first. But the real difference will be made by everyday citizens rising above politics, reaching across the aisle, and resolving to shed the labels in favor of a single one, Americans. It almost, and I don't want to come across like Alex Jones or some of these other crazy fucks, but it almost sounds in certain parts like this is a something written by with Trump's approval, written by somebody like the Nazi Jew, maybe Stephen Miller or Steve Bannon, with Trump's full approval to fire up his base. I mean, really fire them up. And to con the American people into believing that there is a cabal inside the Trump administration that's keeping the ship of state afloat, to which I say horse shit. If it is as bad as this writer says it is inside this administration, we know how bad it is out here. But if it is that bad, then why is this person remaining anonymous? The Times says his job would be jeopardized if his name were disclosed. What the fuck does that mean? His job? I mean, when, and then this person goes, I'm referring to him in the male gender because I think it is a person, a man. But if he feels his job would be jeopardized for identifying himself, how the fuck are we supposed to feel about what he has written? I mean, the whole goddamn nation is at stake. Fuck your job, buddy. If you feel this way, if you are witness to this shit, why do you want to protect your job? There is something weird going on here. And in a milieu that is 1,000% weird. Every fucking thing that's happened since Trump came down the escalator to rocking in the free world has been weird and weirder and now weirdest. Who is this person? I mean, the opening line, President Trump is facing a test to his presidency. A test? Unlike any faced by a modern American leader.
What does that mean?
The dilemma, the guy goes on to say, two or three sentences later, is that many of the senior officials in his own administration are working diligently from within to frustrate parts of his agenda and his worst inclinations. If that is so, why are these people lying in the weeds and doing this? Why don't they pop up, identify themselves, and if it costs them their jobs, they'll go down as heroes for the rest of fucking American history. The people who said no within the administration. If such people exist. I personally think anyone who works for this fucker is as evil and shitty as he is. I'm not talking about the clerks and the people eight tiers down, the civil servants who have been through five different administrations. I'm not talking about them. I'm talking about the policy makers. I'm talking about the people who decide policy, the people who steer this monstrous fucker away from his worst impulses. Why don't you identify yourself? Why don't you stand up and shame this filthy goddamn Republican Party into doing what it should have done a year ago? Impeach this fucker and the Senate, convict him, and get him gone. So fuck your op-ed piece. Jesus Christ, I almost agree with Ms. Trunchbull about this person being a coward. Who the fuck are you standing up for, Mr. Anonymous op-ed writer? Who? And you're not telling us anything that the book Fire and Fury didn't tell us, or the book, what was the one Omarosa wrote?
Unhinged.
And now Robert Woodward's book.
Fear.
You know, your sleazy little op-ed piece doesn't tell us anything we don't know, except this. It tells us that you are a fucking coward, and you put your job first? If it is this bad on the inside, we know what it's like out here, asshole. We're living it. But if it's as bad as you say it is on the inside, why the fuck don't you and the people who are aware of this resist? And this smarmy little sentence you put in here that says, to be clear, ours is not the popular resistance of the left. No, it isn't. The popular resistance of the left identifies itself, states its name and fucking address, and fights. What are you doing, Mr. Anonymous op-ed writer? I'm really pissed about this. When I first heard about this, that I first read it, I thought, ooh, wow, that's really good. And it took me about 5 minutes to go, ooh, wow, this really sucks. God.
So I just have a question. If this indeed is one person, then what happens if he's sick one day and he's not there to yank the nuclear launch code?
He says there's a bunch
from
of
the
them.
Desk.
No, he says there's a bunch. He uses.
Yeah, there's more than one, but I mean, you just get this like loosey goosey network of people saying, "Oh no, Mr. Trump, look over this way."
No, like, he uses words like ours and we and us.
I also have another question, though. I mean, I was reading through the denial list of people who say it's not them, who the hell is left? I mean, it's like, it looked like everyone says, nope, not me. Now, I do know that, who is it, Felt? Who ended up being Deep Throat? He denied it at first, right? And then he came out 30 years later and admitted he was Deep Throat. Do you think one of these people that's denied it thus far is really the new Deep Throat? I mean, because it's got to be somebody. And, I mean, the New York Times isn't I don't believe Trump, you know, they're making it up. I mean, it's got to be somebody, but every cabinet member so far has denied it.
Yeah, no, the New York Times, or as Trump, that rat fucker, puts it, the failing New York Times, you wish, asshole. The New York Times, before they would publish something like this, would absolutely verify the legitimacy of the person who wrote the piece. In a way, this kind of reminds me, it's remote, not fully reminds me, but it just tweaks my memory of the Pentagon Papers, when the New York Times had, who was it that wrote that released the Pentagon Papers? I'll get it in a minute. But when it became common knowledge that these report, the Pentagon Papers are going to be released, it took I think it took an action by the Supreme Court for the Times to go ahead and I may have this history all jumbled up. There's been so much shit in the past 45 or 50 years. Trying to remember the guy, Ellsberg, Daniel Ellsberg, yeah. But when the Pentagon, but when were they published?
71.
And the shooting war, our war crimes in Vietnam went on for another 3 years. So we had thousands more Americans and hundreds of thousands more Vietnamese die. Even after it became clear from the Pentagon Papers that from the very fucking get-go, it was understood that there was no way the United States was going to win in Southeast Asia. It just wasn't going to happen. And the sacrifice, and this is what I get the feeling people just fucking forget. Those 58,000 names, or 56, whatever it is, thousand names on the Vietnam War Memorial Wall in Washington, D.C., are the names of people who died for nothing, nothing, nothing. I mean, Vietnam didn't even wind up as an American colony. They died for nothing, for a fucking lie, by three presidents, four presidents, five, if you want to count Truman. It was the Truman Doctrine, more or less, that got us into that shit. So here we have Mr. Anonymous. You know, the about a third of the way into it, where he writes, the root of the problem is the president's amorality. Anyone who works with him knows he is not moored to any discernible first principles that guide his decision making. I mean, just seeing that in print, when this person wrote that, did it not leap up off the page and slap some goddamn sense into him that he was part of an administration run by an amoral son of a bitch who has no discernible first principles by which he lives? Nothing. Everything is negotiable. Everything is transactional. Everything is, I'll do this if you do that. That the fucker has no, none, zero ties to anything of any value. But whoever wrote this doesn't want to lose his job. Are you fucking serious? I know there's a theory out there that says, look, Malloy, shut up. Okay? Just shut up about this issue. Because if these people were to leave, who the fuck would replace them? Who would get next to Trump? Who would go ahead and tell him, you're a chicken shit if you don't push the button? That argument can be made until hell freezes over. And I don't care. I really don't care. We do not have a government in this country. We have a fucking maniac. And the nuclear codes can't be activated unless the military goes along with it. And if the military, and I believe this is true, if the military, well, what was it? Refusing to draw up battle plans to invade Iran. Refusing to draw up a plan for a surprise nuclear attack on North Korea. If the U.S. military is doing that, then who the fuck is in command? We've had 230 years, roughly, of civilian control over the military. If the military now knows it cannot listen to this son of a bitch, who are they listening to? Who's making the decisions? And if the military is acting independently on these things, then our anonymous little op-ed writer is worse than a fucking coward. He's an enabler. He's in there with them, the Trumpists. That's why this piece, as revelatory as it's supposed to be, to me, is bullshit. I don't mean it's a lie. Every fucking word in here is probably true, except his cheesy little praises of what Trump has accomplished. That really turned my stomach. Effective deregulation? Really? I'll talk about that more next hour. But effective deregulation, which means that rules to shore up the health and safety of Americans are being ripped to pieces by this fucker. And the writer of this op-ed piece says it's effective deregulation and one of the successes of this administration. Historic tax reform, this op-ed writer mentions. Historic tax reform? For whom? It's a fucking theft of $1 trillion from working class Americans. That's historic? I guess in a way it is, isn't it? But not the way this op-ed writer meant it to be, I don't think. And a more robust military, what the fuck does that mean? I'm so sick of hearing Republicans talk about how the Democrats reduced our military. Ooh, we got to build them up again. Here's another $1 trillion, boys. Go kill something. This is horse shit. That's why I say I would not be the least bit surprised if when this son of a bitch steps out of the shadows, it's Steve Bannon. No. It wouldn't be him. The New York Times would not accept the piece anonymously from someone like Bannon. But the op-ed writer says, we're trying to do what's right even when Donald Trump won't. If that's really happening, then the fucker should be removed from office. That's not the oath he took. If he is violating the oath, that is prima facie evidence that he is impeachable. So rather than write your goddamn op-ed piece for the New York Times, why not grab the leader of the House and the Senate by the fucking throat and say, this son of a bitch has to go? Now, you wouldn't do that, would you? Because your job's at stake. And then the writer says, the result of all this is a two-track presidency. A two-track presidency. Where the more insane directives from this fucker are ignored, the foreign policy directives. Because as far as I know, I haven't seen any of the more egregious dismantling of domestic policy by this son of a bitch that has been stopped? And if you were to say, well, Malloy, you don't know what could have happened. Fuck what could have happened. I'm talking about what is happening. And it is happening. Further destruction of rules and regulations that were put in place to try to ensure the safety and health of Americans. So who is this son of a bitch? This anonymous person who says that the Trump administration, ooh, yeah, well, some good things have happened. I feel like I'm in a fucking insane asylum. I mean, I really do. Kathy, let's take a break here. It's just incredible. I'd even welcome back the war criminal George Bush, given a chance. It's available, probably 90% of it is written. 85% of it is up at the Kickstarter site. If you contributed through Kickstarter 10 months ago, whatever it was, it's there. You can go read it. Again, it's an unedited copy. So you have to understand that there. If you're reading it, if you're a reader and you're reading it and you're going, wait a minute, that doesn't make sense. Or wait a minute, he said last chapter he wrote this. You know, that's what happens when you're writing a first draft of a book. The theory is, there's a lot of theories about writing a novel or a memoir or whatever it is you're going to write. And that is just sit down and start writing. And I think it was Truman Capote that said the secret to writing is rewriting. Well, the only part of it that I have rewritten is maybe the first 800 words. The beginning of that book, when it was first put online, to me just was kind of shitty, but it was a way to get started. But anyway, what I'm trying to say is, for those of you who contributed to the original Kickstarter program, there's a copy up there for you to read, and it's about 85% of a finish of the book itself, not a finished product because it hasn't been story edited yet. Blah blah blah. But anyway, what we're looking for is your input. I mentioned this earlier this week. We're planning a book signing or a book launch party in the North Georgia Mountains this fall sometime, early winter. And winter here in Georgia, late fall, early winter, is as far as I'm concerned, unique in the country because we very seldom get snow, but we have nice, crisp early winter, late fall evenings, which evokes in me the smell of bonfires and hikes through the woods and, you know, really nice, pleasant things. Horseback riding, climbing up to see a waterfall, you know. So what we're looking for is some input. Now, this is not a commitment to attend the book signing or the book launch party in the mountains. It's just a survey to select the best date, the best venue. So whether you come or not, And I hope you come. I hope everybody comes. That would be a hoot. But you can still offer your input. If you just go to MikeMalloy.com and indicate your preferred date, if you were to come, and the preferred type of accommodation, if you were to come, and just give us an idea. Now, if you didn't order a book in advance, well, you can pre-order your copy now at the website. And in doing that, I'll be more than happy to give you a signed copy. We don't even know what the title is. We started with some title that after about the first couple of weeks.
Alt-Right, Trump, and Me.
Yeah, the Alt-Right, Trump, and Me, which, you know, what? No, that's not what it's about. It's not about that at all. Although it does get it. Well, you can read it. If you've participated in the fundraising, you can read it. Fundraising, I should say. Anyway, you can go to the website. You can pre-order a copy, and that gives them access to what's up there. How? How do they get on the Kickstarter website? You know more about this than I do.
Yeah. So here's the deal: if you were a Kickstarter supporter originally, then you already have a Kickstarter login. It's the way that you ordered the book, pre-ordered the book, and got whatever little goody thank you package came with that. So you would just go to Kickstarter and log in like you would, and there's a post there for backers, for supporters, that says there's some posts that are for everybody, and there's some that just for supporters. But this one says, you know, read the book, and it's just right there. So if you pre-ordered the book, you have access to reading it, like you said, in its current form.
Yeah, but if they didn't pre-order the book.
Oh, you're talking about the new people.
Yes.
Yeah, so the new people, the deal is because they didn't get in on that book pre-order that was, so they can't access the Kickstarter page because they didn't, it's closed, right? So we're giving them, as a thank you for their $35 pre-order, we're giving them a signed autographed copy.
Now? Well, obviously
when
not now, when it comes out.
Yeah, okay. They get a signed copy.
Well, how did they read what's already up?
I don't know that yet because that wasn't part of the deal. The deal really was if you were an early supporter, you got to read it now.
Okay.
If there's a way to get that access out there, maybe we can figure that out. But
okay.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, back to this miserable shit that I do here every night. Trump's insane allies want Congress to find out who wrote the op-ed piece. Can you fucking believe this? Representative Mark Meadows, Republican of North Carolina, he's the chairman of the most Nazi organization or the most fascist organization in the Congress, the so-called Freedom Caucus, which is nothing about freedom and everything about restricting and controlling not just your mind and your body, but also your actions, everything. So fuck you, Mark Meadows, and your Freedom Caucus. But he says, quote, "We're looking right now at what's the appropriate action from a legislative standpoint to review what's happened." I'll tell you what would be the most appropriate action, you asshole, and that would be to prevail upon your friends on the House Judiciary Committee to begin impeachment hearings. You stupid fuckers always want to go after the messenger rather than the person who's destroying your precious goddamn racist republic. Jesus Christ. This is unbelievable. Meadows also said, quote, "It's alarming when you have people that would suggest resistance to the president that they're serving, especially in light of discussion that may go into the national security realm." The national security realm? There is nobody fucking up national security more than Trump, you moron. You think what this guy is saying in his op-ed piece? That Trump is being restricted in his more insane actions? That's a national security issue? Well, you son of a bitch, Meadows, if it's a national security issue and it's coming from the president, fucking remove him! God, these enablers in the Republican Party are beyond contempt. Christians, every fucking one of them. Man. And then Rand Paul, this crazy son of a bitch, said White House officials any White House official who holds a security clearance should undergo lie detector tests in an attempt to ferret out the people who are speaking ill of the president? Are you serious, Rand Paul, you curly-haired little fucker? What is wrong with you? You're not a libertarian. You're another fascist. You want a lie detector test people who are trying to warn America that there is an insane person running the country? Why don't you lie detector Trump? I'll tell you why. Because once he was strapped in, he would blow the fucking thing into a million pieces. There'd be gears and wires and shit running all over the White House. And that's after they asked him if he was really the president of the United States. Boom! He can't tell the truth. And you, Rand Paul, you little weasel, you want to lie detector test people who have security clearances. Start with his daughter. This is madness. This is madness. Trump has infected every single person who works in Washington, Democrats included, me included, with his particular brand of bullshit and poison. I mean, when you have legislators in the Democratic Party, senators saying, I realize I may be thrown out of the Senate, but I'm still going to release these documents. What the fuck? Because that person is trying to get Trump's nominee to tell the truth, which, yo, Cory Booker, Kavanaugh will never tell the truth. He's like Trump. He is incapable of telling the truth. He is a liar. God damn. And Steve Scalise, that strange-looking son of a bitch who was shot playing baseball, remember that? He's suggesting the possibility of a congressional probe. What the fuck? Oh, really? And how's that going to work? Huh? I know. It's probably Hillary. Bring her in, Steve. Question the shit out of her for another 3 years. You'll catch her eventually, you miserable bastard. Steve Scalise is third in line in Republican leadership. Scalise told The Hill, quote, I'm sure we have a number of members that are looking at that right now. I'm sure you are, you creepy looking fucker. Congressional probe to find out who is exercising his or her absolute right of free speech. God damn. Come on, Scalise, see if you can identify more with the fascist frame of mind. Let's see you do something beyond what you and Rand Paul are suggesting. That people should be investigated, that people should be lie detected, that people should be probed to find out who in the fuck had the temerity to write something like this. Even though it's all horseshit, what this person wrote. God, it as The Hill reports that, listen to this, Trump loyalists are enraged that there are administration officials working against the president, saying that such people are cowards and spies who should immediately resign. They also have lambasted the New York Times for printing an op-ed written by someone purportedly working as a senior administration official describing the actions of an internal resistance group. Trump is turning this fucking country into the Philippines, so why not have people inside in a resistance group? Trump wants to be Duterte. He wants to be able to walk down the fucking street with a couple of AKs around his shoulders and shooting people that he deems unloyal to him or people who won't listen and believe his bullshit. Man. Speaker Paul Ryan, he told reporters today at his weekly news conference that he just doesn't think Congress should be getting to the bottom of the op-ed mystery. Asked if Congress has any role to investigate, Ryan replied, not that I know of. Paul Ryan. Dennis Ross, representative from Florida, Republican, serves on the House Oversight Government Reform Committee, said, he told The Hill, quote, other than expressing our sentiment, there's little we can do realistically. No shit. Tell that. Don't tell that to The Hill, you dork choke. Tell that to Mark Meadows. Tell that to the great Ayn Rand libertarian Rand Paul. Tell them. The writers at The Hill know there's nothing you can do. Not yet. If you get the government that you filthy goddamn fascists want under this pig, then you'll be able to do it. But you haven't quite gotten there yet, you bastards. Jesus. Erratic, ill-informed, amoral. Yeah, that's the president. And then Trump, being the dumb shit, the little Nazi mob boss that he is, he called the New York Times and demanded that they tell him who the op-ed author is. And then he said that that person may have committed treason. Treason? Well, of course. Just like Jefferson Beauregard Sessions III is committing treason every fucking day he's sucking in air because he won't unrecuse himself and bring an end to this terrible persecuting bullshit that our great leader is enduring. They're all committing treason, right, Trump? Jesus. Trump tweeted, and he capitalized, all caps, the word gutless. If the gutless anonymous person does indeed exist, the Times must, for national security purposes, turn him slash her over to government at once. Oh, yeah. In a fucking instant. And then this Putin GRU, Russian intelligence operative, Sebastian Gorka, the former deputy assistant and strategist to Trump, told The Hill that treason is a very real possibility. In a text message, Sebastian Gorka, who is a goddamn direct employee of the GRU, he has to be. He wrote this. There are only two possible scenarios given the current lack of credibility the New York Times is suffering from and the wording of the piece. One, this is a complete fabrication. Two, it was written by the low-level Obama-era holdover, not a senior official, given the complete lack of any evidence in the piece demonstrating that this was written by a person working close to the President Sieg Heil. If it is the latter, then this is a textbook case of sedition. And if this were 1917, like around the time of the Russian Revolution, you prick, or 1944, 1944, the height of the death camps, it would be treason. No one elected this person. As a result, they have no choice but to dutifully serve the duly elected president or resign. If they don't, General Kelly will root them out, and President Trump will fire them. In your dreams, Russian agent, in your fucking dreams, Kelly will root them out. Probably is Kelly. Oh. And Republican Representative Lee Zeldin, who has campaigned with Trump in New York, which is where Lee Zeldin is from, Lee Zeldin said, quote, I don't believe that that person is doing a good service to faithfully execute their job and the performance, their duties. That's how he says it. The person should not be inside of the administration, and they should admit their letter of resignation and move on to something else. No, that's what Trump should do, you stupid son of a bitch. That's what Trump should do. But according to The Hill, Zeldin would not agree that the writer had committed treason. Oh, and then Louis Gohmert, that little turd Louis Gohmert, Republican of Texas. Louis Gohmert said, I think the job is called spy. Gohmert. I can't help it. Louis Gohmert cracks me up. His name cracks me up. But and the way he looks cracks me up. And every time he opens his mouth to say something that I'm sure he feels is just earth-shatteringly important, I can't help but laugh at some of these people, except for the fact that they're part of a cabal that is destroying the country and ultimately the planet. So the humor has a very short shelf life. You know what I'm saying? Every time Gohmert opens his mouth, hee-hee, ha-ha, and then I realize, oh, shit, that's Louis Gohmert. He's a representative from Texas. He's a good buddy to Donald Trump. Why am I laughing? This has become the darkest in the Shakespearean sense, prior to Shakespeare. This goes back to the Greeks, the darkest of dark comedies. And comedy does not necessarily mean a knee slapper, let's all chuckle and laugh. In Greek theater, as you know, I'm not lecturing, had an entirely different meaning. But that's what this reminds me of. And the Greek playwrights who always, not always, but frequently included a chorus, you know, actors who would just stand off to the side and let the audience know what they may have missed in the scene playing out. This is what you're missing. And then on with the action. That's what this is. This is like a Greek comedy with implications that the end of it is going to be stark horror. We'll take a break. I'll be back in a minute or two. Stick around because I want to share this Tom Engelhart piece with you. I'll be right back. Hey, Truth Seekers, I have an important update for you about my upcoming memoir, A Hunter Thompson-esque Journey of Experience, Observation, and Political Awakening of Yours Truly. It's about 90% finished and soon headed to the publisher. It's posted in book form on the Kickstarter page for supporters who pre-ordered the book. And you can read it online right now. Just go to the Kickstarter page. Photos, hate mail, and other memorabilia will be added to the print version. And I think you'll love that. Did you miss the pre-order offer? Well, if you did, don't worry. You now have a second chance to order the book online. And since all the original rewards are claimed, I'll sign your copy as a special second chance pre-order thank you. So visit MikeMalloy.com for all the details. Oh, and coming soon, watch for updates on the fall book signing Glamping Weekend with the Malloys in the North Georgia Mountains. Keep checking MikeMalloy.com for more information. Jesus, just so much bullshit with this administration. But as promised from last hour, when I come across a piece that I think more people should hear about than might be aware of the article, because this only appears online, then I have to read it on the air. I just have to. Tom Engelhart is on the Nation magazine board of directors, or it's not called the board of directors, but he's on the board at The Nation. He also has his own website. It's tomdispatch.com. Tomdispatch.com. And in many instances, he writes an introduction at that website to a piece that he then presents by a different writer. And I don't think I've ever read anything at tomdispatch.com that I felt was anything except received wisdom. You understand what I'm saying? And occasionally he'll write a piece. And that's what I have for you now is something that Tom Engelhart wrote. But in light of what's been going on with this administration, I don't know. I'm a bit freaking out. All right. The title of Tom Engelhart's piece here is Trump's Biggest Crime Isn't Being Covered by the Mainstream Media. And he also adds it's been overlooked, but it probably makes him the most criminal president in history. The most criminal president in history. Here's what Tom writes. I know you won't believe me. Not now. Not when everything Donald Trump does, any tweet, any insult at any rally, when everything Donald Trump does is the news of the day, any day. But he won't be remembered for any of the things now in our headlines. No human being, it's true, has ever been covered the way he has. So what an overwhelming record there should be. News about him and his associates fills front pages daily in a way that only something like a presidential assassination once did. And he has the talking heads of cable TV yakking about him as no one has ever talked about anyone. And don't even get me started on social media and the Donald. In a sense, like it or not, we are all now his apprentices, and his transformational powers are little short of magical. Simply by revoking the security clearance of John Brennan, who even knew that America's deep staters could keep such clearances long after they left government, he managed to make the former Obama counterterrorism czar and CIA head, John Brennan, a once-upon-a-time enhanced interrogation technique advocate and drone meister, into a liberal hero. By attacking former FBI head James Comey, he turned the first national security state official ever to intervene in and alter an American presidential election, and not in Hillary Clinton's favor either, into a best-selling, well-reviewed, much-lauded author. By his dismissive taunts and enmity in life and death, he helped ensure that John McCain would have a New York Times obituary of such laudatory length that in the past it might only have been appropriate for someone who had actually won the presidency. With his charges and passing insults, he even proved capable, miracle of all miracles, of turning Attorney General Jeff Sessions into a warrior for justice. Donald Trump is, in the most bizarre sense possible, a transformational figure, not to speak of the man who makes the fake news fake, or at least grotesquely overblown and overfocused. He has the uncanny ability to draw every camera in the house, all attention, blocking out everything but himself. Still, omnipresent as he is, take my word for it, he won't be remembered for any of this. It will all go down the media drain with him one of these days. Don't be fooled by newspapers or the internet. They are not history. They're anything but what will someday be remembered. Still, let me tell you first, though, what he won't be remembered for. He won't be remembered for entering the presidential race on an escalator to Neil Young's Rockin' in the Free World, or for those Mexican rapists, so-called, he denounced, or for that big, fat, beautiful, he said, wall he was promoting, or how he dealt with Lion Ted or low-energy Jeb and Carly Fiorina when he said, "Look at that face. Would anyone vote for that?" Or what he called the highly overrated Megyn Kelly's menstrual cycle. Remember when he said you could see there was blood coming out of her eyes, blood coming out of her wherever? He won't be remembered for that pussy-grabbing video that didn't determine the 2016 election, or for the size of his hands, or even for those charts still in vogue, those chants still in vogue of lock her up. He won't be remembered for his bromance with Vladimir Putin, or his bitter complaints about a rigged election, rigged debates, a rigged moderator, and a rigged microphone. He won't be remembered for his stormy relationship with a porn star, or even the hush money he paid her and another woman he had an affair with to keep their mouths shut during the election season and thereafter, or his three wives, or the book of Hitler's speeches once by his bedside, or the five casinos that, as a great businessman, he took into bankruptcy, or the undocumented workers he hired at next to no pay, or all the people he stiffed, or the students he took to the cleaners at Trump so-called university, or the private airplane with 24-karat gold-plated bathroom figures he flew in, or those giant gold letters he branded onto property after property globally, or the way he promoted his own children and in-laws and their businesses in the White House, or the hotel that he built in the old post office building on Pennsylvania Avenue once he entered the Oval Office, turned into a hub of corruption. He won't be remembered for the record crew of people who took positions in his administration only to find themselves, within a year or so, or even days, fleeing the premises or out on their noses, including Anthony Scaramucci, 6 days, Michael Flynn, 25 days, Mike Dubke, 74 days, Sean Spicer, 183 days, Reince Priebus, 190 days, Sebastian Gorka, 208 days, Steve Bannon, 211 days, Tom Price, 232 days, Dina Powell, 358 days, Omarosa Newman, 365 days, Rob Porter, 384 days, Hope Hicks, 405 days, Rex Tillerson, 406 days, David Shulkin, 408 days, Gary Cohn, 411 days, H.R. McMaster, 413 days, John McEntee, 417 days, and Scott Pruitt, 504 days. And White House counsel Don McGahn was only recently tweeted out of office, too, with others to follow. He won't be remembered for the way more of his associates and hangers-on found themselves in the grips of the legal system in less time than any other president in history, including Paul Manafort, now convicted of tax fraud, Michael Cohen, pleaded guilty to tax evasion, Rick Gates, pleaded guilty to financial fraud and lying to investigators, Alex van der Zwaan, pleaded guilty to lying to investigators. Michael Flynn, pleaded guilty to lying to the FBI. George Papadopoulos, pleaded guilty to lying to the FBI. With plenty more, it seems, to come. Nor will he be remembered for the number of close associates who turned on him, from his personal lawyer, Michael Cohen, who once swore to take a bullet for him, only to testify against him, to the publisher of the National Enquirer, David Pecker, who had long buried salacious material about him, only to accept an immunity deal from the federal prosecutor to blab about him, to the Trump Organization's chief financial officer, Alan Weisselberg, who did the same. Nor will Donald be remembered for his mafia-style language and focus, words like rat, loyalty, flipping, his familiar references to a mob boss, the way he clings to his personal version of omerta, the mafia code of silence, or for being, quote, a president at war with the law, end quote. He won't be remembered for campaigning against the Washington swamp, his word, and on arrival in the White House creating an administration that would prove to be an instant swamp of personal corruption, from EPA head Scott Pruitt's $43,000 soundproof office phone booth The millions of taxpayer dollars he racked up for a 20-person full-time security detail, and the more than $105,000 he spent on first-class air travel, and another $58,000 on charter and military planes in his first year in office. To the near $1 million of taxpayer money, Health and Human Service Secretary Tom Price ordered flights on private chartered planes and military jets. To Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke's $12,000 charter plane ride on an oil executive's private plane. His nifty $53,000 worth of helicopter rides on the public dole, and his $139,000 office door. To Housing and Urban Development Secretary Ben Carson's $31,000 office dining set. And that's just to start down such a list, without even including Trump and his family. Nor will he be remembered for the sinkhole and stinkhole of environmental pollution he and his crew are creating for the rest of us, nor for the estimated up to 1,400 extra premature deaths annually, and, quote, up to 15,000 new cases of upper respiratory problems, a rise in bronchitis, and tens of thousands of missed school days, end quote, CDC, thanks to his administration's easing of federal pollution regulations on coal-burning power plants, nor for greatly increased levels of air pollutants like mercury, benzene, and nitrogen oxides, thanks to its push to relax air pollution rules of many sorts, nor for the suppression of news about pollution science, nor for drastic cuts to the budget of the EPA, lest it protect us against anything at all that corporate America wants to do, nor for the opening of America's waterways to far greater dumping of waste and pollutants, including mining waste. And that, again, is just a start down a list. By the time he's done, the swampiness of Washington and the nation will undoubtedly be beyond calculation. But that is not what history will remember him for, nor in the country that may already have outpaced the inequality levels of the Gilded Age will it remember him for the way in which he and his Republican colleagues, thanks to their so-called tax reform bill, have ensured that inequality will only soar in a country in which three men, Bill Gates, Warren Buffett, and Jeff Bezos, already have as much wealth as the bottom half of American society, which is 160 million people. Nor will it remember the way Donald Trump reinforced racism and a growing tide of white supremacy, just the prerequisites needed for establishing a so-called populist view of authoritarianism in the United States, including the birtherism by which he rose as a politician, his so-called even-handed remarks after Charlottesville, his implicit racial slurs, his obsession with black football players who take a knee in protest, his tweeting of a white supremacist conspiracy theory about South Africa, for which former Klan leader David Duke tweeted his thanks, and the rest of a now familiar litany. Nor will the man who claimed in campaign 2016 that he could win better than the U.S. military high command. Remember when he said, "I know more about ISIS than the generals do." When it came to America's wars, or get us out of them, he remembered nothing. Nor for his urge to pour yet more tens of billions of taxpayer dollars into the Pentagon and the national security state. And keep in mind that this is just to graze the surface of the Trump presidency. And while all of it matters, or at least obsesses us now, and some of it will matter greatly for a long time to come, it's not what history will remember Donald Trump for. On that score, the record is clear. in part because we are already beginning to live the very future that will remember Donald Trump in only one way. It's a future that, at its core, has animated his presidency from its first days. Whatever else he thinks, says, tweets, or does, President Trump and his administration have been remarkably focused not just on denying that humanity faces a potential future of environmental ruin, as in the term climate change denial, so regularly attached to a startling list of people in his administration, but on aiding and abetting the disaster to come. As everyone knows, Donald Trump is taking the world's historic number one and presently number two emitter of greenhouse gases out of the Paris Climate Agreement. He is also, not to put the matter too subtly, a fossil fuel nut, nostalgic perhaps for the polluted but energized American world of his 1950s childhood. From his first moments in office, he was prepared to turn his administration's future energy policy into what Michael Clare has called, quote, a wish list drawn up by the major fossil fuel companies, end quote. He has been obsessed with ensuring that the United States dominate the global oil market, saving the dying coal mining business in this country, building yet more pipelines, rolling back Obama-era fossil fuel economy standards for cars and other vehicles, and letting the big energy companies drill just about anywhere from previously out-of-bound waters off America's coasts to Alaska's protected Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. In other words, every act of his related to energy reveals the leader of the planet's last superpower, quote, quote, as a climate change enabler of a sort that once would only have been the fantasy of some energy company CEO. This makes him and his administration criminals of an historic sort. After all, he and his cronies are aiming at what can only be thought of as terricide, the destruction of the environment of the planet that has sustained us for thousands of years. That would be a literal crime against humanity so vast that it has, until this moment, gone unnamed and until relatively recently, almost unimagined. In the wake of this summer, climate change denial, however ascendant in Washington, is an obvious joke. You no longer have to be a scientist studying the subject, or even particularly well-informed, to grasp that. As New York Times reporter Samini Sengupta put it recently in covering the heat waves that have engulfed the planet, quote, for many scientists, this is the year they started living climate change rather than just studying it, end quote. The rest of us are now living it as well. The math is no longer even complicated. As Sengupta points out, 2018 is shaping up to be the fourth warmest year on record. The other three, 2015, 2016, 2017. In fact, of the 18 warmest years on record, 17 took place in guess which century. For the lower 48 states, this was May to July, the hottest summer ever. Japan had an unprecedented heat wave. Europe broiled. Sweden's tallest mountain ceased to be so as its glacial peak melted. Numerous fires broke out within the European part of the Arctic Circle. Scientists were spooked by the fact that the oldest, strongest ice in Arctic waters started to break up. California, along with much of Western North America, burned amid air so polluted that warnings were regularly issued in a fire season that threatened never to end. The temperatures set records at over 86 degrees Fahrenheit for 16 straight days in Oslo, Norway. Over 91 degrees for 16 straight days in Hong Kong. 122 degrees in Nawabshah, Pakistan. 124 degrees in Ouargla, Algeria. Ocean waters were experiencing record warmth, too. And again, that's just to start down a far longer list and but a taste of what the future, according to Donald Trump, has in store for us. Imagine, for instance, what the intensification of all this means. A California that never stops burning. Coastal cities swamped by rising seas. Significant parts of the North China Plain, where millions of people live, made potentially uninhabitable thanks to devastating heat waves. Tens of millions of human beings be turned into the very people Donald Trump hates most, migrants and refugees. This is the world that our president is preparing for our grandchildren and their children and grandchildren. So tell me that he won't be remembered for his absolute, if ignorant, dedication to the taking down of civilization. In other words, the one thing Donald Trump will be remembered for, and what a thing it will be, is his desire to put us all on an escalator to hell. To, that is, a future of fire and fury. It could make him and the executives of the largest energy companies the greatest criminals in history. If the emissions of greenhouse gases aren't significantly cut back and then halted in a reasonable period of time, the crime he is now aiding and abetting with such enthusiasm is the only one, other than a nuclear war, that could end history as we know it, which might mean that Donald Trump won't be remembered at all. And if that isn't big league, what is? Oh, my God. I'll tell you what, Truth Seeker, you should have a copy of this. You should have a copy of it. It's at thenation.com. It's at tomdispatch.com. You should have a copy of this. I've been talking about weather-related crises for about the past 15 years, just what I've gathered from the popular press. And when I first started talking about planetary heating, global warming, anthropogenic climate disruption, whatever you want to call it, from the very beginning, to me, it was something that I wouldn't have to deal with, nor would my children, nor would my grandchildren, because everything I read said that the most dire predictions about the most dire consequences were still a century away or more. By the year 2100, the year 2150, the year 2200. And as a result of that, like most people who are staring into an abyss that is horrifying, denial set in for me. Not that I didn't believe in it. Oh, hell yes, I believe that the planet is heating up. And I believe that we're facing, I don't know the right word, the tragedy of all tragedies. I don't know. But something that we have pushed beyond our ability to control. There are enough nuclear weapons on this planet to wipe out the solar system. But we have some form of control. At least that's the hope. The idea of self-preservation. The idea of mutual assured destruction. if anybody were to use nuclear bombs. Now, that idea is eroding quickly because there are so many failed states on this planet now, with people who do not have a stake in the future and don't give a shit. And if they get their hands on nuclear weapons, that's kind of it. But global warming, planetary heating, and this insane, maddening, crazy fucking attitude by the leaders of this country, political and business, to continue to deny, ignore, pretend that nothing untoward is happening. It's beyond my ability to process. I cannot process it through my brain. I can't. It gets stuck. And now I realize, I've come to realize over the past couple of years that I wasn't paying attention to everything that these climate scientists were writing, because there was always kind of a codicil in what they wrote, and that was simply, now these numbers, these scientific predictions, these theories are not 100% certain, because it's a new science, climate science. And besides, we've made our estimates very conservative. When we talk about global disaster by the year 2100, we're pushing it out there because we don't know. We're just not sure. And now they're sure, and I'm sure. And anyone with a brain, all you have to do, as Tom Engelhart cited example after example in this essay, all you have to do is take a look at some of the heat-related phenomena that have occurred on this planet this year. Temperatures above 85 degrees north of the Arctic Circle. That's impossible. Not anymore. And the one thing that Engelhart left out, the only other horrifying thing I can think of, is what is happening with the melting and the softening of the permafrost across the northern latitudes of this planet. Permafrost that has been in place for thousands of centuries, frozen solid. And because it's organic material, it contains an enormous amount of trapped methane gas. Methane gas, which is shorter-lived than CO2, but 20, 30, 40 times more destructive in its heat-trapping ability. And the methane that is bubbling up out of the deepest parts of the ocean, which the scientists cannot fully understand because we don't fully understand parts of our own planet. Methane that is bubbling up out of the ocean. I mean, it's hard to remember that we live on a planet the core of which is a roiling, bubbling, boiling, red-hot mass of molten rock and fire and fury. And what's being done about global climate change? Nothing in this country. In fact, a mark of so-called conservative, a.k.a. fascist, success stories by these senators and representatives is the fact that they are undoing and destroying, right along with Trump, every single feeble attempt made by Barack Obama to try to rein this stuff in. And they celebrate every time. I keep hearing Trump and his cult followers talking about the wondrous new world opened up because of all the regulations that have been gutted or destroyed or deep sixed by executive order. And they're all regulations having to do with the safety and lifespan of human fucking beings. And then I watched this weaselly son of a bitch this afternoon, Brett Kavanaugh, this Nazi fuck, talking about, in his roundabout way, the sanctity of a goddamn fetus, a zygote, a fertilized fucking egg. It's madness. It's insanity. I know I talked about a lot of this shit first hour. I just... I don't know. Kathy, let's take a break. I'll be back momentarily. Stick around. Or not. Cory Booker, Cory Booker today made it very clear that his job as a senator is less important to him than making sure that the truth gets out about this weasel that's sitting there expecting confirmation to the Supreme Court. Today he released emails from Brett Kavanaugh's time as a White House counsel during the criminal George Bush administration, which had the net effect of escalating the fight over Kavanaugh's documents that the Republicans don't want anyone to see. And the very simple reason why not. You know, Kavanaugh, like Gorsuch, like every one of these Republicans, is a goddamn liar. They will say any fucking thing that is necessary to be said where it concerns these confirmation hearings, whether it is to be the attorney general, the lying little shit Jeff Sessions, or Supreme Court justice, like this one, this Kavanaugh thug. So what Booker did, he released about 12 pages of emails that were tied to discussions Kavanaugh had on racial inequality, including one email thread that was titled Racial Profiling. Now, the chairman of this committee had decided that he had or somebody had the right. I don't know if it was Chuck Grassley or this weasel that's reviewing all of all of Kavanaugh's records. But somebody thought they had the authority to mark these documents committee confidential, which doesn't mean shit. There is no such classification of documents. Committee confidential. They might as well say brick store nose booger. It has no meaning whatsoever. Nothing. The meaning Grassley has attached to them is that they're not supposed to be discussed or released publicly. Who the fuck do these people think they work for? Well, we know who they think they work for, and it goddamn sure isn't the American people, and it goddamn sure isn't, has nothing to do with the oath they took to protect and defend the Constitution. That is so fucking quaint, it's almost gagging. Booker, one of the few brave people on that committee, there are no brave people on the Republican side, those goddamn Nazi bastards. There's a few, and maybe more than I suspect, on the Democratic side. Booker said at the hearing today, quote, I am right now before, and he was addressing Kavanaugh, before your process is finished, I'm going to release the email about racial profiling. And I understand the penalty comes with potential ousting from the Senate. He can be thrown out. I don't know how the fuck that's possible. He wasn't elected to the Senate by this crotchety old bastard who belongs in a home, Chuck Grassley. He was elected to the Senate by the people of New Jersey. Booker acknowledged that if he released the documents, which he did, he would be, quote, knowingly violating the rules, end quote. Fuck the rules! The whole goddamn country is being run by a maniacal son of a bitch and his enablers. And they're going to get on Booker? About a rule? Are you fucking serious? However, according to a spokesman for the Senate Judiciary Committee, Booker was not breaking any confidentiality rules at all. No. In an email, this spokesman said, quote, restrictions were waived before 4 a.m. this morning and made ready for release. Oh. You see, tens of thousands of documents have been given to the committee with this stamp of committee confidential on them. Shortly before Booker released the documents he said he was going to, this sorry old son of a bitch, Chuck Grassley, had his staff release a whole bulk of new emails previously marked committee confidential. And Booker's emails were included in that document release. But Booker's move, according to The Hill, Booker's move immediately sparked a rhetorical firefight between Judiciary Committee members, with both sides accusing the other of bad behavior. Oh, give me a fucking break. What are the Democrats doing that is bad behavior? Jesus Christ. Democrats in the committee had argued that the release process wasn't fair. Democrats have taken issue with this guy, Bill Burke, Bush's lawyer. George W. Bush's fucking lawyer. George W. Bush is a private citizen. Who the fuck is Bill Burke? But he's the one who sorts through the documents that were generated during the Bush administration. And Burke is a former Republican staffer and a colleague of this miserable prick who maybe knows he's going to be confirmed on the Supreme Court. And then this Burke prick this afternoon got all over what he called Booker's histrionics. You son of a bitch. Over the release of the documents, Burke said, quote, we cleared the documents last night shortly after Senator Booker's staff asked us to. We were surprised to learn about Senator Booker's histrionics this morning because we had already told him he could use the documents publicly. In fact, we have said yes to every request made by the Senate Democrats to make documents public. That is a fucking lie. But so what? Everything about this Republican Party, this American Fascist Party, and this regime is a lie. Booker had questioned Kavanaugh last night about his, Kavanaugh's, stance on racial inequality. And he was referring to emails from Kavanaugh's time as White House counsel to George W. Bush. But Republicans later pointed out that one of the emails that Booker was referring to was labeled as committee confidential. Sounds like some film noir from the 50s, doesn't it? Committee confidential. Dun, dun, dun. In one of the emails, Kavanaugh questioned affirmative action regulations in the Department of Transportation, the Federal Department of Transportation. In one of the emails, Kavanaugh wrote, quote, "The fundamental problem in this case is that these Department of Transportation regulations use a lot of legalisms and disguises to mask what in reality is a naked racial set-aside," end quote. Oh, fuck, Kavanaugh. Let's not have any racial set-asides. Oh, my fucking word. Especially when the set-asides are about the Negro race, right? Oh, my God. Reality is a naked racial set-aside. Uh-huh. And then he adds that he believes that the four Republican justices on the Supreme Court will, quote, "realize as much in short order and rule accordingly," end quote. Now, what do you suppose he meant by that? That the Supreme Court would rule against the regulations within the Department of Transportation that require diversity because we live in a diverse country. What the fuck is wrong with these people? Well, it's very simple. They are racist bastards. Every single one of them, in addition to being a liar and a fascist. Jesus Christ, are we in a world of shit? You know, we really are. We really are as a country. Senator Mazie Hirono, a Democrat of Hawaii, followed Cory Booker's lead, tweeting screenshots of documents, according to The Hill, from Kavanaugh's time at the Bush White House that are stamped "Committee Confidential." Senator Hirono's tweet included two pages of an email thread from 2002 about, quote, "Treasury testimony on capital investment in Indian country." And Kavanaugh wrote in that email thread, quote, "I think the testimony needs to make clear that any program targeting Native Hawaiians as a group is subject to strict scrutiny and of questionable validity under the Constitution." In other words, change the wording, you dumb shits. Hirono, prior to the release of the tweet, said, quote, "I would defy anyone reading this document to conclude this document should be deemed confidential in any way, shape, or form." Senator Richard Blumenthal, Democrat of Connecticut, added that there was no basis for the rule and said Democrats are here under protest. Blumenthal said, quote, "I hereby reserve the right to release documents before any confirmation vote so that my colleagues can see what the truth is. Between now and any vote on confirmation, there's the right to release documents that she or he believe are inappropriate," end quote. Sheldon Whitehouse, Democratic Senator, Rhode Island, said, quote, "I've not made a big fight about this, but again, lest silence simply imply consent. I think that rule is as ineffectual as if the chair had unilaterally repeated the law of gravity. It simply isn't so. I haven't agreed to this rule," Sheldon added, or White House added. "I haven't voted on this rule." And Grassley, growing testy, interrupted Cory Booker's speech announcing he would release the documents. And Grassley said, "How many times are you going to tell us that?" I'm surprised he didn't add the word Negro. Jesus Christ. Booker then released later on today 5 pages of additional emails that the senile old bastard Chuck Grassley's people confirmed had not been cleared for release. Yeah, we'll put that in your pipe and smoke it, you racist fucks. Jesus God. And this, the third day of this thug's hearings before the Judiciary, Senate Judiciary Committee, began with Cory Booker announcing early on that he would, quote, knowingly violate the rules, end quote. I don't know. I just... I just feel so disoriented by all this. You know, it was easier to focus on the stupidity and the war crimes of George W. Bush and that cadre of fascist intellectuals that he had around him, like John Yoo and Cheney and the rest of them. Because it was fairly obvious that George W. Bush was a mouse. He didn't know half of the shit that was going on. Trump knows all the shit that's going on because he is the one who originates all this horrible, horrible breakdown. When's this son of a bitch going to be gone? What's it going to take? When I read that op-ed piece for you last hour, you know, I am part of the resistance inside the Trump administration, the piece that appeared in the Times this morning. And then today watched, it was released last night, on the Times website, of course, and then watching Trump just becoming even slimer and more of a rat than he really is because of what this op-ed piece says. And I keep hoping, let this miserable fucker have a nervous breakdown. Let him become even more crazy than Nixon was. Nixon had a drinking problem, but as Kissinger wrote in one of his books about the Nixon White House, at the very end, Nixon, drunk on his ass, stumbling up and down the hallways in the White House, talking to the portraits of previous presidents and raving on about how everyone was out to get him. What is with these fuckers that they're all so paranoid? But Nixon had around him at the time a group of Republicans. I think who was it? Was it the head of the Joint Chiefs of Staff? I'm not sure who it was. Who said any order issued by Richard Nixon for any use of nuclear weapons was to be cleared through him. Was it Schlesinger? I forget who it was. Which meant then, like now, who the fuck is in charge? This is supposed to be a democratic republic where there is a clear chain of command. And like that op-ed said today, that chain of command is gone. So who's in charge? Oh, man. All right. I'm losing my place here. That's it from me for tonight. This shit just has me absolutely flummoxed. I'll see you next time. In the meantime, take care and keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. Hey, Truth Seekers, I have an important update for you about my upcoming memoir, A Hunter Thompson-esque Journey of Experience, Observation, and Political Awakening of Yours Truly. It's about 90% finished and soon headed to the publisher. It's posted in book form on the Kickstarter page for supporters who pre-ordered the book. And you can read it online right now. Just go to the Kickstarter page. Photos, hate mail, and other memorabilia will be added to the print version, and I think you'll love that. Did you miss the pre-order offer? Well, if you did, don't worry. You now have a second chance to order the book online. And since all the original rewards are claimed, I'll sign your copy as a special second chance pre-order thank you. So visit MikeMalloy.com for all the details. Oh, and coming soon, watch for updates on the fall book signing Glamping Weekend with the Malloys in the North Georgia Mountains. Keep checking MikeMalloy.com for more information.